You just had, you weren't really attracted then to the idea of New Radio.
Well, I can't remember exactly how, but the one of the earliest memories I have of being interested was an article in an evening newspaper about a pirate radio station.
In England?
In Dublin. Now, there had been the offshore radio stations, such as Caroline and so on the air, and the whole topic was something that was in the air. So someone started a station.
Before you?
Yes, in Dublin.
You were the first.
No, David Kelly. There was a newspaper article about this station.
And what was that called?
Initially, it was Radio Atlantis, and then he later changed it to Radio Carina, and that was in 1965. He started in late 64.
I never knew that. And were you the first person then to begin free radio transmissions?
No.
Using the title? You didn't use the title Radio Dublin?
No.
Radio Ballyhoclia?
Yes, I used Radio Ballyhoclia at one stage. Different names, such as Radio 2 and 7. I think Radio 2 and 7 was the initial.
And that was the medium wave frequency you were on?
That's right.
And what time are we talking about, like?
Well, the start was
65.
65, yes. 66, around that time.
And it was a transmission you built yourself?
Yes.
From scratch, like, or from plans, or just dreamed it up yourself?
Oh, well, I had a basic plan to go on from the Practical Wireless magazine.
And what sort of output or range, what sort of output did the transmitter have?
Well, at the beginning it was really only a few watts. I mean, literally 5 or 6 watts, I suppose.
So we're talking about a mile or something, are you?
Yeah, very limited.
Now, so you weren't really putting out programmes? Was it music or...?
Just tapes with music and some commentary on them.
Mm.
And also, in those initial stages, we used it for communicating or attempting QSOs.
Was this be with Radio Atlantis or Radio Carina?
Yes, and there were a couple of other stations that came on air too around that time. Channel 66 was one of them.
Was this in Dalkey?
Blackrock.
Yeah. I never knew that. And over what period are we talking about? Did you keep this going yourself?
Over a number of years, intermittently, like up to about 1972.
And you had no, like, you weren't doing a weekly thing every Sunday, no?
I would be on most Sundays or Saturdays for perhaps an hour or. Half an hour.
And did you get to meet the others, like the other radio stations?
Oh, well, I met, yes, you know, over the course, again, of a matter of years, I met initially David Kelly, and then subsequently the operator of Channel 66, which subsequently was renamed Radio Jacqueline.
Mm. Now, you handed over your transmitter.
Yes.
And the name of the station.
Yes.
Which I presume you were calling Radio Dublin at that stage, was it?
Probably. I can't actually... I certainly use the Irish version.
No, more frequently than Radio Dublin.
Yes.
And who did you hand it over to? Who did you give it over to?
To Roger Lloyd.
Prince Terry.
Otherwise Prince Terry.
Yeah. Why? Did you lose interest?
Well,
or was it getting too much of a hassle or what?
Well, at that time, I think that the possibility of detection was becoming a real possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But I also didn't feel the same enthusiasm as I had felt some years earlier. So I decided to let other more enthusiastic people, you know, have a go.
And did you contact Prince Terry, or did he contact you, or was somebody you got to know?
Well, he initially wrote, I think, and then I wrote back, and then he called around to me. And
what sort of letters were you getting?
Well, there were a number of stations at one period, that was in 1970, called the United Stations, and we got an accommodation address. But apart from that, we didn't have any real mailing address.
So when you started in 1965, you would know you weren't able to give out a mailing address, or were you giving out a British address or anything?
No.
No, nothing?
No. Although at a later stage, we did have a mailing address, which came via County Carlow.
Oh, yeah. And did you ever use one in Brighton, no?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, first.
That was around, I think, 1970, the United Stations.
That was in Hume Street, was it?
Well, that's right. We had, for a period, the Hume Street address, which we gave in the year.
Now, when you handed over Radio Dublin, you gave away the transmitter.
I did, yes. I ceded it, the operation, to Prince Terry.
But and you still remained involved with Radio Dublin.
I did, and
yeah,
at that
advisory capacity, sort of.
That's true. At that time, also, there was also a couple of others who had come on the radio scene. That was
Mark Story,
and.
Because I can remember you. Would this be 1972?
That's right.
Yeah, because I think that's when we first got to know you, and I can remember you. I'd say you were present at all broadcasts, were you?
I was, yes.
Yeah.
At most.
This is in Prince Terry's flat in Cromwell.
That's correct.
And you were, I remember Prince Terry kneeling down, and it was sort of you were broadcast on your knees.
That's right. We didn't pray on our knees, we broadcast on our knees.
Yeah. Well, you know, this, well, it's not exactly a controversy that's been going on, but would you consider yourself the founder of Radio Dublin?
Well, not in its present form.
Yeah.
Because
it
evolved, of course.
Yeah, that's, I know. But you were the first person to run a radio station called Radio Dublin.
Yes, I suppose so.
And would you recognise any continuity then with the present Radio Dublin, or do you think it's no connection with the operation you started?
Well, apart from perhaps just the name, that would be the only link, because it's very different in almost every other respect.
What, I mean, the present Radio Dublin is claiming to be what, how many years old?
Well, I suppose
19, would it be?
20 years next year.
Yeah. And they seem to recognise your operation as the original of the present station they're running.
Yes. Well, I suppose there is, it depends, you know, on point of view. There is a continuity.
Yeah, but only in the sense that it's the same name.
Yes, and the fact that the people involved came to be linked to one another through.
But I mean, when it had moved out of Roger's hands, you still maintained an involvement, didn't you?
Yes, it's an involvement through association.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. I mean, you had nothing to do with programs or.
No.
Oh, you're just an advisory capacity, shall we say?
Yes.
Just on more general issues. I mean, you were talking there about 1965 and the small stations, a couple of watts. Are you surprised now at how things have developed and expanded from such small beginnings, like people in flats kneeling down on floors and things like that? I mean, it's a totally different situation now.
Oh, it is. I would never have thought it possible, but you know, in sort of almost, I could say, my wildest imaginings, but it's a kind of, in a way, reflection of a general change in atmosphere and attitudes. Some people see it as a decline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And would you claim any credit for initiating any of this back all those what we're talking about now, only 20 years ago?
I suppose I had I would have to admit to having a part, having
because played. When I think about it, you're the only one really that's still
alive.
No, but I'm thinking now of Radio Jackie you mentioned, and I'm thinking of Radio Caroline Dublin.
Yes.
I mean, none of those people are involved, well, certainly not on the production side. Maybe building transmitter or something like that, or I think that's all that's ceased as well.
Yes. Well, I think some of them were involved up to more recently.
Yeah.
Davit was one person who was involved up to some years ago.
You just touched there on the reasons. Why do you think the number of radio stations has sort of gone out of all proportions? Every little town and village in Ireland now has its own free radio station.
It's very interesting because most of them are very similar. It's more of the same. If you tune all along the band, I mean, at the time when we started it originally, the official radio, as it was, you know, had very little by way of pop music orientation. And there was a real, well, it seemed at the time, a real need. But the interesting thing is that it has changed the official setup into providing a pop music station, which is in competition with the larger pirate radio.
I mean, you call them pirate radio stations.
Yes.
I mean, they have nothing in common with what they're commercial radio
That's
stations.
That's right. The others were more properly called hobby stations.
Hobby pirates.
Yes.
Just one final question. Do you think anything is being lost in the process? Like, we currently have very large commercial stations in Dublin and Cork and the larger cities. Is it too commercial now, the scene?
Well,
or is it inevitable that it will go like that?
Yes, it's an interesting question because the thing about the large stations, the commercial stations, is that most people accept them almost as fixtures, and they don't really think of them in terms of pirates. And I suppose, you see, one of the original arguments against the whole business was the scarcity of wavelengths, which I didn't at the time believe to be a cogent reason, but
it's been shown not to be true.
Well, there is a problem, I mean, with the proliferation of stations, there is the problem of interference. You know, as they increase the power and spread out all over different wavelengths. In that sense, I think there may have been a problem.
But most people in Dublin would probably recognise you or claim you'd be the father of pirate radio. I mean,
well,
something which is, it's...
Well, I suppose too, I did have a certain role in, not so much in the actual station, but in organising, because we did have at one stage a radio movement to coordinate, and it brought into contact people. For example, Radio Dublin, as it later became managed under Captain Cook, was on relatively low power, and managed to contact an engineer that had been a member of the radio movement, and whom otherwise mightn't have been, people who otherwise mightn't have been brought into contact. It led to a kind of an interlocking of people that brought forth the new phase, which began in 1977 with this greatly increased transmitter power. That put the pirate stations on the map.
You must hark back to the days of the late 60s.
Yes, the early days, and of course it's changed totally, and there are still people, I suppose, doing hobby pirate transmissions. There are quite a number of stations.
Kenneth Sheehan, thank you.